Welcome back to our podcast series. In our last episode, we met a mysterious man in a dingy London opium den, lost in hazy dreams of exotic visions mixed with a cathedral tower. That man, as it turns out, is John Jasper, a choir master who rushes back to his quiet cathedral town for evening service. It sets a tone of hidden darkness beneath a respectable surface. Now in chapter two, we shift fully to that cathedral world, Cloisterham, a sleepy old English town. We'll meet more characters, including the Dean, a verger named Tope, the cheerful minor canon Crisparkle, and Jasper himself, along with his nephew, Edwin Drood. This chapter builds the everyday life in Cloisterham, hinting at tensions under the calm. Let's ease into the story. Chapter 2, A Dean and a Chapter Also. Picture a rook, that serious-looking black bird often seen around churches. You've probably noticed how, when a group of them flies home at dusk, two might break off, circle back a bit, and hover as if discussing some secret important to their flock. It's like they're pretending to leave, but can't quite let go. In the same way, after the evening service ends in the old cathedral with its square tower, and the choir hurries out while serious old men scatter like rooks, two of them turn back and walk together through the echoing courtyard. The day is fading, and so is the year. The low sun glows red but feels cold behind the ruins of an old monastery. Virginia creeper on the cathedral wall has dropped half its deep red leaves onto the pavement. It rained earlier, and a chilly wind ripples through the puddles on the cracked stones and shakes the big elm trees, making them drop more leaves like tears. The fallen leaves are thick on the ground. Some try to sneak into the cathedral door for shelter, but two men coming out kick them away. One locks the door with a big key, while the other walks off with a large music book. "Was that Mr. Jasper Tope?" asks one. "Yes, Mr. Dean," replies the other. "He stayed late." "Yes, Mr. Dean. I've been waiting for him. He seemed a bit unwell." The younger man corrects him gently. "Say taken, Tope, not to the Dean. He's hinting that fancy grammar isn't needed for church folk, but plain talk for the Dean." Mr. Tope, the chief verger and guide who shows tourists around and acts superior to them, ignores the hint. The Dean repeats, "When and how was Mr. Jasper taken, poorly Tope?" Tope explains carefully. His breathing was so short when he arrived that it was hard for him to play his notes. Maybe that's why he had a little fit afterward. His memory got dazed, and a strange dimness came over him. But he didn't seem too bothered. A bit of time and some water cleared him up. The Dean nods. "And he's gone home feeling like himself?" "Yes, sir. I'm glad to see his fire lit. It's chilly after the rain, and the cathedral felt damp today. He was shivering." They all glance at an old stone gatehouse across the courtyard, with an archway under it. Through its window, a fire glows against the darkening sky, shadowed by hanging ivy and creepers. As the deep cathedral bell rings the hour, a wind stirs the leaves far off, like an echo of the bell humming through the tombs, towers, and broken statues nearby. "Is Mr. Jasper's nephew with him?" the Dean asks. "No, but expected soon. There's his shadow by the windows, one facing this way, one toward the high street, drawing his curtains." The Dean smiles brightly, ending the chat. "Well, I hope Mr. Jasper isn't too attached to his nephew. In this short life, our feelings should never control us. We must guide them. Hearing my dinner bell reminds me pleasantly of dinner. Mr. Crisparkle, perhaps you'll check on Jasper before going home?" "Of course, Mr. Dean. And tell him you kindly asked after his health?" "Yes, do that. Wish to know how he was." The Dean tips his odd hat cheerfully and heads to his cozy red brick house, where he lives with Mrs. Dean and Miss Dean. Mr. Crisparkle, the minor canon, is fair and rosy-cheeked. He loves diving into deep rivers around the countryside. He's an early riser, musical, classical, cheerful, kind, good-natured, social, content, and boyish. Recently promoted from teaching pagans on the roads to this Christian role, thanks to a grateful patron. He heads to the gatehouse for his early tea. "Sorry to hear from Tope you weren't well, Jasper." "Oh, it was nothing. You look tired." "Do I? I don't feel it." Tope exaggerates. It's his job to make everything cathedral-related seem big. "May I tell the Dean you're fine now?" "Yes, with my thanks. I'm glad you expect young Drood. Any moment now. He'll cheer you up better than a doctor. Better than a dozen. I love him dearly. And I don't love doctors or their medicines." Jasper is a dark man, about 26, with thick, shiny black hair and whiskers. He looks older than he is, like many dark men. His voice is deep and pleasant. his face and build handsome, but his manner a bit gloomy. His room is shadowy, too, maybe shaping his mood. Even in bright sun, it doesn't light the grand piano in the corner, the music books, the shelves, or the unfinished painting over the fireplace, a pretty schoolgirl with flowing brown hair tied in blue, her beauty childish and saucy, like she's aware of it. The painting isn't artistic, just a rough sketch, but it's humorously like the real girl, maybe even a bit revengeful. We'll miss you at the musical evenings tonight, but you're best at home. Good night. God bless. Tell me, shepherds, tell me, have you seen my Flora pass this way? Crisparkle sings playfully as he leaves. Greetings echo from the stairs. Jasper listens, jumps up, and hugs a young man. My dear Edwin. My dear Jack, so glad. Take off your coat, sit in your corner, feet dry, pull off your boots. Jack, I'm dry as a bone, don't fuss like a mother. Jasper stops, smiling oddly, his face showing hungry, watchful affection, always focused fully on Edwin. Now, let's eat, Jack. Jasper opens a door to a small lit room with a table set. A kind woman is placing dishes. And here's Mrs. Tope, lovelier than ever. Never mind me, Master Edwin. I can handle myself. You're too pretty. Kiss me. It's Pussy's birthday. I'd pussy you if I were her. Mrs. Tope blushes after the kiss. Your uncle spoils you too much. You think you can call any girl pussy. Jasper smiles. You forget, Mrs. Tope, and you too, Ned, that uncle and nephew are banned here by agreement. For what we're about to receive, thanks. Like the dean. Carve, Jack. I can't. Dinner starts. Little talk until the table's cleared with walnuts and sherry left. Tell me, Jack, does saying uncle and nephew bother you? It doesn't me. Uncles are usually much older, Ned. Maybe, but some uncles are younger. I wish we were like that. Why? Then I'd lead and be wise. Don't drink. Why not? On Pussy's birthday, no happy returns? To Pussy and many more. Jasper drinks silently. Hip, hip, hooray. Now let's talk Pussy. Nutcrackers? How's she doing with music? Fairly. You're so serious. She's inattentive, right? She could learn if she tried. But if she won't. Crack. How's she looking? Very like your sketch. I'm proud of it. Caught her expression well. Seen it often. Crack. Silence. Lost your tongue, Jack? Found yours, Ned? Isn't it unsatisfactory to have no choice? Our dead fathers arranged our marriage. Why couldn't they leave us be? Tut, dear boy. Tut, easy for you. Your life's not mapped out. You choose freely. Don't stop. Did I hurt you? How? Good heavens, you look ill. Your eyes are filmy. I've taken opium for pain that hits me. The effects pass like a cloud. Look away. They'll go faster. Edwin stares at the fire. Jasper grips his chair, sweats, breathes hard, then relaxes. Edwin helps him recover. You thought no skeleton in your closet, Ned. Upon my life I did, but even in Pussy's or mine, you meant my life is quiet, no world devoted to music. Yes, but I'd add you're respected as choir leader, independent, great teacher, even Pussy says so, and connected well. I hate it, the monotony grinds me. Our service sounds devilish to me sometimes. I'm weary, like a monk carving demons. What can I carve but from my heart? I thought you'd found your place. They all think so, even Pussy. When? Last visit, 3 months ago. Said you're made for it. Jasper glances at the portrait. Anyway, I'll stick to it. This is between us. Sacred. I told you because I feel it. We're friends. I love and trust you. They shake hands. Take it as a warning. Edwin pauses then. I'm shallow, but I feel your sacrifice in sharing this. Jasper steadies, laughs. No, don't hide it. I see you're suffering. But I'm not in danger. Soon I'll marry Pussy, go engineering east. We'll get on fine. She's beautiful, and when good. Jasper watches intently, smiling. You won't be warned? No, don't put yourself there. Walk in the churchyard? Yes, but drop gloves at Nun's House for Pussy. Poetic, eh? Nothing half so sweet. Parcel in my pocket. Ready. They leave together. And that wraps the chapter. Now for the summary. In chapter 2, we settle into Cloisterham, a quiet, ancient cathedral town frozen in time. After service, the dean and minor canon Crisparkle chat with Verger Tope about John Jasper, the choirmaster from chapter 1 who's been unwell, hinting at his opium effects. Crisparkle visits Jasper, who's gloomy but expects his nephew, Edwin Drood, Ned. Ned arrives full of energy and they dine, teasing about Ned's fiancée, Rosa Budd, Pussy, whose portrait hangs in Jasper's room. Their talk reveals an arranged marriage from their father's wills. Jasper confesses his secret opium use for pain and his dissatisfaction with his monotonous life, warning Ned cryptically. Ned brushes it off, optimistic about his future with Rosa. They head out, with Ned leaving birthday gloves for her. This chapter contrasts the town's calm respectability with Jasper's inner turmoil, introducing key relationships, Jasper's intense affection for Ned, the uncle-nephew bond, and the upcoming marriage. It builds mystery around Jasper's double life, connecting back to the opium den, while setting up Cloisterham's inhabitants for the drama ahead. In the bigger story, this establishes motives and tensions, Jasper's hidden addictions and possible jealousy that fuel the central puzzle of Edwin's disappearance later. Thanks for listening. Join us next time for Chapter 3.